Welcome back to another episode of Jhalak, A Glimpse into ICM, where I take a look at the development of ICM music through the ages. We have developed very far into our little quest, and we were able to cover a ton of content last episode, so feel free to listen to last week's episode to quickly recap all that we discussed. Once again, today's episode has a decent amount of content for us to talk about, so let's dive right in. The Datelam is a relatively short text, around 244 stanzas, and it spreads over around 12 chapters. It's said to be written around the time that the Natya Shastra was written. While the text looks at a lot of things, it looks at aspects that provide the foundation for today's ICM. The different permutations and combinations of sequences of notes, also known as thans, are a very fundamental part of Indian classical music today that probably emerged from texts like these. Just like last week, we'll pick up right where we left off, which is during the Gupta period, a period well known for its literary excellence and artistic development and refinement. During this period, a very important text was written, and its name was Datelam. Another feature of the Datelam text that makes it so interesting to look at is that it looks at a type of transitory type of music that developed when Bharat Muni wrote the Natya Shastra. That type of music was called Jati Gayan. Jati are a group of songs which have similar characteristics and follow certain rules, and Jatis have a very well-knit structure. The Datelam describes the 18 jatis, which are the fundamental melodic structures for jati gayan. And these jatis have 10 basic characteristics, which the Datelam also succeeds in describing. The reason why I'm really excited to share these characteristics of these jatis is because they are really similar to the structuring and elaboration of ragas today. Now, it's important to remember that at this time, jati gayan wasn't the only kind of music. Margi music, similar to the Marga music that we learnt about earlier on, also existed. But there was also Deshi music. Deshi music was, you can consider it to be the contrast to Margi music. It was kind of like folk music. While Margi music was still very sacred and national in its scope, Deshi music is more regional and differs from place to place. It was like the music of the people. So you can imagine that Deshi music is much more relaxed and carefree compared to Margi music. Brihadeshi is a book that was written by Matanga Muni that talks about the difference between Deshi music and Margi music. According to him, Deshi is that which is sung voluntarily and with delight and pleasure by women, children, cowherds, and kings in their respective regions. However, Jati Gayan as a whole was entirely pre-composed, very different to the improvised structure of contemporary ICM. But what's important is that the way the Datelam approached these musical concepts, such as Jati Gayan, made the transition to ICM way smoother. Deshi music captured a range of human emotions from different regions, which, when you think about it, makes sense because Deshi music was more people-based, whereas its counterpart, Margi music, was more based on theoretical and religious concepts. Through notes, the Deshi music was formalized into ascending and descending scales. In fact, it was in Brihadeshi where the word raga was mentioned for the first time. It was also in the Brihadeshi when Saregama Padhani Sa was used. So that was the start of folk music and its significance in society. Let's move on to the next major part in the development of ICM. Hindustani music began to evolve after the pre-medieval Indian music passed through certain stages of transformation and development until the beginning of the 11th century. It is here that we start to see many Indian and non-Indian cultures taking a part in this transformation. For example, in the 9th century, the Sufis were able to secure themselves in India. They had a great love for music and accepted many pre-existing customs. Followers of a certain Nizamuddin Chishti, a Muslim scholar, even incorporated some customs such as the Basant and Rang celebrations in their own lifestyle. Islam culture can be said to officially enter India at the end of the 12th century. This brought Persian music and culture with it. And naturally, when two cultures meet, there is going to be a blend somewhere. While the attitude of Muslim rulers towards Hindu religion and culture differed from ruler to ruler, some aspects of Muslim culture became an inextricable part of India's culture, such as in Hindustani Shastriya Sangeet. How did this happen? Well, we know it didn't happen all of a sudden. The strong foothold that Muslim rulers had on India lasted from the late 12th century to like the 18th century, when Aurangzeb passed away. It was a gradual assimilation, a gradual joining of these two cultures. So Khusrau led a pretty amazing life, traveling throughout India and writing insightful poems, you know, living his best life. But how has he changed ICM as we know it? Well, that's one of the easiest questions to answer. You see, not only was Khusrau able to create beautiful poetry, he also brought into circulation a special kind of subgenre called tarana. A tarana is a type of composition which basically uses certain words and syllables such as odani, todani, tadim, tom, etc. Taranas are still sung by a lot of classical musicians today. Even me, someone who's learning classical music, still at a very basic level, I have learned one tarana. Now, after researching, I personally believe that the main drivers of the change were the leaders in society. This includes the sultanates such as Khusrau in the 13th century, to Raja Man Singh of Gwalior in the 15th and 16th century, to the infamous Akbar, and the list goes on. I think that it was here where there was a platform for those like Tansen to express their musical and artistic ideas. Of course, there were many books written at the time as well, for example the Sangeet Ratnakar, that compiled all this information that further allowed this gradual change to happen. Let's start at Amir Khusrau. At the age of 9, Khusrau started writing his own poetry, and that really became an area where he did really well. In his lifetime, Khusrau was able to compose almost 500,000 poems in a multitude of languages, such as Persian, Turkish, Arabic, and even regional dialects. Between 1265 and 1325, Khusrau spent a lot of time in many courts learning about the differences in each region. For example, Khusrau's visit to Multan brought him in contact with Persian music, and his visit to Bengal exposed him to Vaishnavite music. His poetry is timeless, which is why it's still used today. A lot of songs have parts taken from his poetry. One of my personal favorites is this song called Piyasenena by Sona Mohapatra and Ram Sampath. It uses one of Khusrau's most famous poems titled Medo Piyasenena Laga Aire. It is a really fun song to listen to, and I'll have the YouTube link to it in the description box of this episode. I will leave some links of taranas sung by fantastic musicians if that interests you in the description box of this episode. So this was Khusrau's lasting legacy on ICM. Then we have people like Raja Man Singh Tomar of Gwalior, which is in Madhya Pradesh. Raja Man Singh was the driving force behind introducing and consolidating Drupad, another genre of Hindustani classical music that is performed even today. Another aspect that left a lasting legacy on ICM was not a person, it was a book. It was the Sangeet Ratnakar, which I did mention earlier. This book wasn't really special because it said anything groundbreaking or new. It was special because it collated a lot of the information from other texts from the past to produce a cohesive piece of work that tells us a lot about music at the time. For example, it outlines what Rag Sangeet is, what it would sound like, and all its conventions. It is said to be a must-read for scholars and those who do really deep research into the history of ICM. Raja Man Singh also composed some songs. By replacing some Sanskrit songs with Hindi songs, Raja Man Singh was able to relate music to the lives and language of the general population of the time. He also used his advantage of being a king to support the arts. He allowed for a range of arts to be sung in his court by both Hindu and Muslim musicians. After seeing the large amount of talent that there was in his court, Raja Man Singh endeavored to systemize the music that was currently available. It was in this project that resulted in yet another treatise called the Man Kuthal. So you can see that, you can start to see that with the Sangeet Ratnakara and now also the Mankuthal, there's this gradual shift towards consolidating all these ideas surrounding classical music, which is no mean feat. Now, the next step that changed the identity of ICM was not a person or a book. It was a specific movement that occurred during the 14th and 15th centuries. It was called the Bhakti movement, and it was a devotional movement, emphasizing the intense emotional attachment of a devotee towards their personal god. This movement kind of started in southern India and traveled north as the Alvar and Nayanar saints moved north. Then it became a widespread thing all across India. This probably explains why so many bhajans in today's day and age are based on regional dialects rather than Sanskrit or Hindi, which would not have the same effect on people. Many saint poets used regional languages during this movement, allowing for the general society to understand and also join in this movement. When the Bhakti notion spread to the north, it resonated with theoreticians such as Ramanujacharya and saint poets like Tulsidas. It also resonated with Vallabhacharya, who directly contributed to the theory and practice of music, therefore impacting Hindustani art music. Other famous figures during the Bhakti movement were Jayadev, Chandidas, Narsimh Mehta, and possibly the most famous, Mirabai. In parallel to the Bhakti movement, we enter yet another phase in Indian history which affected ICM today, and that is India under the rule of the Mughal dynasty. Now, there were many emperors in the Mughal dynasty, and they had many courts that were open to musicians to sing. Now, Tansen was a famous singer from a very famous Mughal emperor's court. He was from Akbar's court. Tansen is so famous in Indian history for many things. He wrote many treatises. He created many ragas. And he didn't even create ragas, but he also reduced the number of ragas from 4,000 to just 400. And the number of talas from 92 to just 12. When the Mughals ruled India, temple music sort of took a backseat, and Darbar Sangeet, or the king's court music, and Sufi Sangeet, which had its roots in Khusro's time, became at the forefront. Tansen created ragas like Darbari Kannada, complex ragas which he would then perform in the courts of Mughal emperors such as Akbar. That's all for today. We will continue to look at Akbar and the last segment of ICM's intricate history in the next episode. Until then, I hope you have an amazing rest of the day. Thank you so much for tuning in, and goodbye for now.